God,
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome them.
Hey,
if you're on Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessarily moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices a spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is, the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions about after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This meeting, we're discussing steps 5, 6, and 7. Please welcome our panel this evening, Kyle and Don. I will read the first page on, the first reading on page 72. And the panel will share for a few, page 72. Oh, I'm sorry. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and step 6, we're entirely ready to have step 7, humbly asked in tyranny, page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do with it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed, will mean that we have admitted to our God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. This brings us to the fifth step in recovery, in the program of recovery. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reason, the best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, new themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling, almost invariably they got drunk. Having preserved with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. They had not learned enough humility until they told someone.
My name is Kyle. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kyle.
My home group is Last Call, Hampton, Last Call, Young and Sober. We meet Friday nights, 8 p.m. There's a longer list in the meeting guide app. So, but if you see Last Call Friday night, 8 p.m., that's us. We're at St. Mark's United Methodist Church in Hampton, Virginia. First Fridays, we have game night. Third Fridays, we go out to eat. Come join us. We're a rowdy bunch. Just leave it at that. And then I have a sponsor, and I have the pleasure of being a sponsor. And I'm just really grateful for this program. So now that's out the way. My sobriety date is March 2nd, 2011. All right. So the fifth step, like, I don't know, I'm a big words guy. And, you know, I remember around the third year of sobriety, I got a, I had a sponsor, and I was writing out my fourth step. And then he, like, I thought I was done. And I was like, hey, I need to drop my fifth. And he wasn't picking up the phone. And I finally got somebody. And we did the fifth step, and it was amazing. And it was something he kept emphasizing, the attitudes that are in the book. And it says in the second sentence, we've been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our creator and to discover the obstacles in our path. In my experience, that new attitude that I was gaining was trust in God, in my higher power. Many, many times in my sobriety, like, no, I know that God's going to take care of things. And knowing, you know, as an alcoholic is such a, you know, flightless thing. It's small in comparison to what my higher power can do in my life. And that's my experience today. But I don't always buy into that. That's not the knee-jerk position that I take. Trust in God is something that stands out to me. And for me, when, like, I was just this past weekend, I was listening to a fifth step, and we talked a lot about the difference between, you know, just knowing that God is going to be there in my life and trusting in God. If you haven't heard the wheelbarrow analogy, you know, a couple of drunks go to a high flying act, and they see this trapeze artist walk across a tight rope, and they're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And that's like knowing God. Like, you get to see God do these wonderful works for these other alcoholics. And you see this trapeze artist walk across this thing with a wheelbarrow, right? And you know it's going to happen. You see him, like, up there. He walked across and done this whole act. And you see them do this. The difference between knowing God and trusting God is get in the wheelbarrow. And so this fifth step kind of, you know, shows me that, like, I need to get in. And all of the, you know, a thorough inventory, an honest and thorough inventory kind of leads me to that. It's interesting with how well, you know, the first 100 alcoholics they knew when editing this book, and with Bill writing it, this is the one part where it's like, ooh, I don't know if I'm going to do this, right? And he makes it very clear, like, if we skip this vital step, you may not overcome drinking. And makes the very clear point, solitary self-appraisal insufficient. I don't know how many times today, you know, I'll go over, ooh, I'm angry. That was a resentment. Nice. Moving on. And it's like, oh, okay. Just push it down. You know, it's like, just do the thing that you did always before drinking and in sobriety. It'll be fine. And then I get on the phone with my sponsors, like, some kind of calamity has to happen. And all of a sudden I'm willing to actually talk about it versus actually getting that anger and getting the habit of just talking about it, right? Because these are tools. This fifth step is not just something you just do once and it's magic and you just never use it again. You know, my sponsor tricked me into sobriety. He was like, call people. And I'm like, why? He's like, just call some alcoholics. And I'm like, okay. And I called them, and I'd be telling them about my life and my day. And little did I know, I was, you know, giving some kind of level of inventory, though it was nothing practiced, nothing specific. It was a tool that I was tricked into. Vicious, right? So the importance of this step is unbelievable, you know, to the point of, like, that solitary self-appraisal insufficient. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary, until they told someone else all their life story. That part sits heavy with me, because I remember reading that the first time, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want to hold on to this egoism and fear. And I don't want to just have thought of humbling myself. I actually want to do it. I didn't want to hold that mask any longer. And, you know, it's what I've found in experience. It's very important for me personally to, when I'm doing a fifth step, to do it very quickly. Like I've done a fourth and soon after, as soon as possible, I'm going to do a fifth step because my alcoholic brain will just go crazy otherwise. And that's just my personal experience. So it's cool. We kick this off and think.
Donaldson alcoholic.
My
sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. And my home group's the Westgate Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday. Kyle, you hit about everything I was thinking about saying.
That's what you get.
I can always improve on it though. That's what you get. Now that I set the stage, I'm probably gonna flame out like a big dog. I think about getting a new attitude about my creator and a new relationship. What I think about is more about humility and submission, if you will. It says down here at the bottom, it says that the whole thing about egoism and fear and all that stuff that I do, I just my ego rebuilds itself on a daily basis. And so it's very difficult most of the time to try to stay in that space. And so doing this is part of that process of having a new relationship. I used to think that God and I were partners, but that's not God. God is God, and I'm just the agent. I'm not a partner with God. I don't have we're not co-equals in this life here. And so I'm God's agent, as it says in the book. And I'm the son rather than the father. So that's what I try to do, think about this. And, when the interesting thing I always thought about the fifth step in the book is that it doesn't really tell you how to do it, except to read. So if you're sitting there and you're hearing somebody do it, I know a lot of people want to listen to, we're going to find patterns in what you're doing and all this and try to psychoanalyze you while you're reading this stuff. I've had sponsors do that. I've had sponsors not say a word. So we'll get to that a little later. But this part is always about, to me, this is not really in the book, but I'll say this anyway. The word spirit means breath, to breathe. And when I speak, I'm breathing. I have to breathe to speak. So my brain is filled with all kinds of garbage that I have stuffed in it for all that time I was drinking and during the course of my life in general. But since we're going to start with the newcomer, it'll be all that stuff I did when I was drinking that I haven't had a chance to talk about. This step allows me to purge all those things in my brain. And that's the stuff that's blocking me from a relationship with a power greater than myself. Those things that I hold inside of me that I have found when I did the fourth step, but I haven't really talked about to anybody. I haven't really submitted them for examination to anybody, which is what I don't want to do because, as we read later on, I don't want anybody to know those things. Those are not things that I'm interested in broadcasting to people. And the other thing about this is that it says we have ascertained what our trouble is and put our finger on the weak items of the inventory. Now we're about to have these cast out. What does that mean? They're going to be cast out. It just means I don't have to do anything. I just have to acknowledge that they're there. And then when I get to that prayer, they're going to be removed. And I don't have to work on anything. I don't have to do anything. I just have to be aware of what it is I'm doing and why I'm doing it. It's a wonderful thing. And then, the actual practice, the solitary self-appraisal. I had a sponsor who has since died. And I was telling him, I called him on the phone once. I was like, I've written inventory about all this. Well, when did you do that? Oh, last week. Did you read it to anybody? I said, well, no, I dealt with it. I knew what was going on. Yeah, right. And he laughed a little bit and he says, well, Donald, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we work all the steps. And I went, Because in my mind, I thought I had done them all. The truth is, I had not spoken to anyone about what this problem was I was dealing with and gotten another perspective, or at just at least spoken. Sometimes just getting it out and talking. It's all, he hears it, but it's really, it's about talking to God. So I think that's really important. And again, it's about communication. It's learning how to communicate on a fundamental level with people that I never learned how to do before, because that was my life. My life was like hiding from everybody, just doing what I wanted to do and thinking that was cool. And that, you know, I did not ever think about speaking to people on a very fundamental level about who I was, what was going on with me, all those things. Those things, I mean, I wasn't afraid of it. I just didn't do it. I thought it was unimportant. It didn't bother me at all. And I'll never forget, they had to put me in a treatment center in 85 when I was down in Florida, because I had wrecked a couple cars and fallen off buildings and broke bones and all this stuff. You got a drinking problem. No, you got a problem with my drinking. I don't have a problem with my drinking. Right? I mean, that's the old thing. And so I go to this treatment center and they say, oh, we want you to write down, you know, it's called a 4-step inventory. You're going to write about your life. I went, oh, great. I was going to brag about it, right? And I hadn't done all that much, but I was like, whatever it was big to me, right? I let everybody, I wrote it all down and all this stuff. And I get up and they go, now you get to tell people. Oh, great. I thought, I love doing it. I was going to brag. I had nothing to do. And I did it, but I didn't get anything out of it. I got drunk within, you know, 100 days after leaving that place. But I knew that I had to do this. And I knew I had to write an inventory that was a lot more focused than the one I did in treatment. Imagine that, treatment. So then the last part of this, then I'll move on, is they only learned. I had not learned enough about humility, fearlessness, and honesty. You know, I hear a lot of times about people always talking about, you know, this is not about feelings. We don't talk about feelings. All of these are feelings. Humility, fearlessness, honesty, that's all feelings. How do I feel? That's my reality today. Whether it's right or wrong, it's still my reality. And I'm trying to get all that centered up and right so that I don't get off kilter. And when I find all that stuff out, I'm giving that stuff to God so that I don't have to worry about fear, about being in fear, about not being honest with people. So it's really, really important. And there was one thing I was going to say, and I forgot what it was. I admitted certain defects. Oh, yeah, the last thing. Now, whenever I sponsor people, we have them do all, they do the resentment inventory and the fear inventory and the sex inventory. And then we sit back down and read all of this, and we get to this last part until they tell someone their entire life story. And I always make these folks tell me the things. This is the go to the grave stuff that people do not want to talk about. I make them, you know, I have them write it down. Some of them don't because they're afraid to write it because their circumstances, you know, could be in the Navy. But that's the last inventory that they do, the go to the grave stuff, and it's right there, the entire life story.
Second reading, page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, this is the one he likes fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency, coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles as fast as he can. He hopes they will never see.
Oof. Yeah. I remember in rehab, there was a guy we called the Exorcist, and he was a mechanical engineer and a neurosurgeon, and he was 25 years sober, and he just started talking about alcoholism on this like biological, chemical, metaphysical standpoint, and explain in the most eloquent way how screwed we really were. And it was essential for me, because that made me feel hopeless. Like, science has proven I am hopeless, you know, like that was a shocking thing. And I just remember the anxiety that I felt with him is the same anxiety that I see here. I know alcoholics that, you know, do not fear death, but fear this. And that, it talks about reputation, right? When I was out drinking, I wanted to appear smart and intelligent and you know, have a hopeful career, and people were excited to see the life that I led, when really I was faking everything. I was, you know, trying to prove this reputation in like a dealer's house, like at some party, and being the sloshed one, or being the one that was like trying to get more messed up than everybody, like it was a competition, right? Or the things that I did to try and get drunk as well, right? And trying to get messed up. It was that cold feeling of that somebody's noticed me. Somebody saw behind the mask, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't like that. And I don't like that feeling that somebody actually sees me for who I am. I'll never forget my sophomore year chemistry teacher. You know, another science has a big part of my first step. It's weird. He's like, man, Kyle, you're just a ball of potential energy. Everyone is waiting for you to become kinetic. And I was like, thanks. You know? He is under constant fear and tension that makes for more drinking. You know, Don makes a point. That constant fear and tension, we all know the undulating fear. And I was like, man, I'm going to get sober and this undulating fear is going to go away. And I forget that, like, oh yeah, I drank a number of years. I push this stuff down for a number of years. And it does go away, but I have to continue to work at it. I have to continue to, you know, keep that channel clean between me and my higher power, and constantly. It's not that I purposely fill it. It's that by nature, that thing gets filled with a bunch of pomp, circumstance, idolatry. Yeah, idolatry. I put so many things thinking that they're higher powers, like my wife, like my friends, like money, like success or whatever. And I put it in the way. And then I wonder why I just still feel upset. I thought that there was a certain point. I thought I should have been sober by now. Like, I remember distinctly multiple times across sobriety, like I felt like that. And I'm not talking about multiple times years ago. I'm talking about like a month ago, 2 months ago, maybe yesterday. I'm not sure of it, but you know, like, like this is a daily reprieve, you know? And so this part, like that stands out to me so clearly. I was a theater kid in high school. So when it read this part, I was like, who told them that I was the actor? I was purposely trying to be the actor. I wanted to be everybody's friend, and I thought I was entitled to that. Right? And that, I thought if I was friendly with you, you were going to like me, and therefore I was going to feel some kind of value. And when that stopped happening, I was like, what is going on? Right? So though it's only two paragraphs, it punches me in the gut, as a lot of the big book does. And thank goodness for that, because I really forget what surrender actually is as an alcoholic. And I have to remember that, especially in this fifth step. So thanks, let me share.
Well, I will never forget when I was about 30, I was driving down, I was either in St. Louis or in Tampa. But I'm driving down the street and I had this feeling that I didn't know a damn thing about anything. I just was overwhelmed by this sense of just, oh my God. And it was unbelievable. How did I get to where I am and be so damn stupid? And then even in my mind, I kept telling myself, well, you went to college, you know this, you know. I clicked off all the intellectual and stuff that I had done, all the physical, all this stuff, and it didn't go away. So what did I do? I pulled into a liquor store, bought myself a couple pints, and that feeling went away. And I said, I can't let anybody know how lame I really am. And that to me was what that says. That's my double life. I'm afraid to tell you that deep inside, and I could be totally wrong. God tells me I am totally wrong. I would say that. But I just have this feeling sometimes in my life that I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I'm doing it. And how can I be so stupid? How can I be? I mean, when I say the word powerless, that is mild to that feeling I get when I'm in that space. It blows my mind. And I can't let anybody know that feeling, that I have those feelings and have those thoughts. So I don't want anybody to see it. So I want to enjoy my reputation, right? So what's my reputation? Confident, a smart ass, successful. All those things that I want you to see me as, right? So then there's that tension. And the thing about this is that this is alcoholism. It's there when I'm drunk or sober. And it's even worse when I'm sober, which is why I have to work the steps. Because this feeling will start to take over and I'll start judging myself and others based on this feeling, which is completely irrational, has nothing to do with reality. It's not God-centered at all. It's alcoholism. It's alcohol generated. And it says, I'm revolted at certain episodes. And it's not talking about drinking sometimes. I'm revolted at certain episodes I have in my own mind. I'll go someplace and get in the car and go, God, oh my God, help. Nobody knew what I was thinking. Did I let anybody see that? I mean, these things happen drunk or sober, which is why this is such an important, these two paragraphs are just, they nail me. And this is where I am prior to walking into my sponsors and reading my inventory. This is who I really am, because I had not really communicated who I am to another human being and to God. Right? That's what's so important about it. And this is also important to remember that I got to do that when I'm writing inventory, when I'm 20 years sober and I have to talk about it to somebody. I got to do that because that stuff starts. And so, and it says, you know, I'm lying to myself when I say I vaguely remember certain episodes. I remember it like it was yesterday, for crying out loud. But I want you to think, I kind of vaguely remember I did something about that. You know, right, yeah, right. You know? Because the book says I'm constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. I can't tell you the truth about me. Why? Because I don't know it a lot of times. I don't know why. The easiest thing in the world is to come to realize that this is all alcoholism. That's all that it is. I sat down with a woman once a long, long time ago. She was 17 years sober. And she was like, I got all these crazy problems going on. Blah, 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 blah. Wow. And I said, well, I got bad news and I got good news and bad news. The bad news is that you have something that you can't cure. The good news, we had 12 steps for it. And you get removed. It will be removed from you for a while. But this is life or death for me. And it's true today, as true today as it was when I.
All right. Our next reading, page 75. When we decide who is the hero story, we waste no time. We have written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, eliminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, we can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs. The feeling that the drink, we feel we are on the broad.
So what's cool is that, like, the big book literally excuses any idea of like a sponsor specifically, you know, even hearing this part. Right. And I remember my sponsor talking about sponsorship is like, you know, you're a tour guide. Somebody buys a ticket. It's a tour. You're just showing them like, hey, look at this picture. Look at that picture. They're looking at it one way. You're looking at it from a different position because you're just another drunk that got here before them. And this literally removes the necessity of having that. With that being said, just personally, in my 13 years of sobriety, I haven't really heard too many people that have not done the fifth step with a sponsor. And it was important for a lot of people that they do it with a sponsor. So I don't know what that means, but that's just my experience. So take with that what you will. But it's cool that like the big book is like, hey, find somebody and let them know exactly why you're doing this. This is a life or death errand. Most people in this way will be glad to help. So the promises, when I first did my fifth step, first of all, like my fourth step was nothing like it was in the big book. I was literally writing out like it was just pure id written on a paper of just my life. Like my first resentment was, there was a guy that just looked at me in my home group and he's like, your new nickname's Kyle Didius. And I was like, what? He's like, I don't know, man. That's your new nickname. And I'm like, that was my first resentment. That was the first one that I wrote down. I was just like, all right, cool. And that got the whole thing started. And my fifth step, I didn't necessarily follow through with what was needed. And in this next, you know, in the next reading, we'll kind of go over that, but I had more to write and I wrote more and I talked to my sponsor about it. And after that, it was like me, God, and a pack of Black and Milds. And it was so spiritual. I was sitting down on the porch of the recovery house and I felt like, man, that's everything. The cup had been emptied. It was done. I was like, I got all of that out. I literally got all of that out. And it was every single embarrassing thing, everything that I hated about myself, everything that I was worried about. And it starts with some stupid resentment. Like friggin' Steve called me Kyle Didius. And like, what I get from it is this huge release of like, I don't have to live that way anymore if I choose to. And it was very strange, very, very strange to read the words of like, you know, that the feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway. I was like, you know, that deep self-resentment was just like, that's BS. That ain't gonna happen. And it happened. And that closeness was there. Some people don't feel that. And that's okay. You know, these promises, what I found, always do happen. They don't necessarily happen with the action with that step. Not for everybody. I know for me, it was important. And it goes back, I don't know, I just think of that trust thing. Like, I didn't necessarily trust promises would actually happen as it relates to a relationship with something I didn't even fully understand or didn't really get, because, you know, I valued knowledge and my feelings, right? Like as an alcoholic. And here it is, like we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, knowledge, right? I have this belief of something, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. And I was like, damn, I'm in the wheelbarrow, you know? Like I'm actually doing this thing. And it was cool to hear, you know, when I came in the rooms, I was 23, and Fridays at 1 p.m. in Richmond, it was like an older meeting. I didn't have a job or whatever. And I called it the AARP meeting. And there's an old timer that he said, and I was like, man, I finally finished my fifth step. Afterwards, he's like, welcome to AA. And I was like, oh, snap. I'm in the club. Oh, cool. You know, I'm like, man, old timer shook my hand. You know, and it was one of those cool moments for me. So anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Al. let's see, this part, when I'm listening to a fifth step, I always ask the person, why are they there? I want them to tell me why they're there. So they, and if they don't tell me they're on a life and death errand, I ask them, are you on a life and death errand? Do you believe that if you don't do this, you'll get drunk again? Let's see. And so I want them to know why they have to do this. So I want the person I'm sponsoring to tell me why they're there and what they, and why they're having to. When I did my first inventory in AA, the guy that had me do it, I don't know where he got this thing, or some Hazleton's. I had some Hazleton thing, and it had taken all these questions that are in the 12 and 12 in the big book. I mean, in the inventory section in the 12 and 12. And I had to answer, I had to apply them to early life, adolescent, early, and had all the, and I was, by the time I got to my middle adulthood, I was blown. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Right. I was just, I had pages and pages of stuff. So I took it over there to read it. And I did an inventory out of the big book about 5 years later, when I was sober about 5 years. And that completely changed my life because of the way it was focused on the spiritual side of my nature, not my psychological side, but my spiritual side, because the spiritual side is cured, not cured, addressed the mental and physical. But I sat down and did this. And I pocketed my pride. I eliminated every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. And at the time, I withheld nothing. And so this is telling me I'm going to feel this way while I'm doing my inventory, some varying degree of freedom, because I'm letting this stuff go that I've held on to for such a long time. It starts that process. And I'll just say this. This tells me what I'm supposed to do when I'm doing a fifth step, but doesn't tell me what to do when I'm receiving the fifth step. And there's a lot of different ways that people have with listening to other people. So we won't go into all that right now, except to say that I've always found the best way is to not say nothing, unless it's blatant that someone has missed the point. I can't tell you, I had a couple people they were so totally off. They didn't know what they were. They had completely missed everything we had talked about. So I had to stop them and tell them to go back home and finish it up. This is what you had to do. I had to actually sit down with them and walk them through it. But I will tell you one other quick thing, and that is, I want to say this because this happened to me after I did the seventh step, but we're running out of time, so I'll make sure I say this. After I did six and seven, because we go and they go back and do this other stuff, about an hour after I was done, I got a phone call. So this is 1995, so I got a phone call on a landline from a woman that I had dated in St. Louis that I hadn't seen in 3 years. And she called me on the phone, and I had just finished my fifth, sixth, and seventh step. And I was able to make amends to her because I will never see her again. And I made amends to her on the phone. And then that was good, right? So, and I thought, well, that's odd. An hour later, another woman I dated in Missouri who lived in Springfield, Missouri, she called me on the phone. And they don't know each other. And I got a chance to talk to her. I never talked to her again either. So I say those things because that's my experience, that this is this thing, there's something that's going on in here that proved to me at that time. I'm a skeptic. I'm a God skeptic from the get-go. That's my hope. But not when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have experiences that tell me this is no BS. That this stuff is actually here, and this is what happens when people pay attention to and to do what they're supposed to be doing, and mean that they have a spiritual experience. They get on that broad highway. Those things do happen, and sometimes I'm too stupid to know it's happening to me. I mean, I just think I don't get that. I turn around 6 months later or 6 years later and go, oh, that's what that was. But I'm going through it. I'm too dumb to know that, right? Or not self-aware is what I like to think. Anyway, thank you. I didn't mean to jump ahead. I apologize.
At our fourth reading, page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our hearts that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. For we are building an arch to which we should. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on this? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, are we now ready to let me now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to page 76. When ready, we say something like this. My creator, I am now willing that you should have all of us, all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as a
God. Oh, so much. That first four step, it said to take an hour and actually consider. And I didn't do that. I went to a meeting, right? And I didn't hear, it was a speaker meeting. I didn't hear any of it. I was having a spiritual experience, little did I know, but I was also having a panic attack. I was freaking out. And as I said, I had just dropped a fifth step. There was beautiful scenery. You couldn't have asked for a better location. Like, it was great. I had said all this stuff. My sponsor told me, like, hey, take an hour. And I'm like, I'm freaking out. I'm going to go to a meeting. And it's like, no. Like, this is between you and your higher power. Nope, didn't do that. I remember picking up the Black and Milds, and just because I was like, at least I'll be smoking something, right? And like Black and Milds, that's much better than what I used to do. And I was on the phone with my wife's actual current sponsor, and we were talking to her, and she's like, are you drunk? And I'm like, not yet. And I remember, being frustrated, hanging up the phone, and somebody suggesting, hey, maybe you're not done with your inventory. And I was like, oh, and that's what preceded that kind of moment where I realized there was more. There was just a lot more. And I wrote a whole lot more and had an experience. There's a guy in the rooms, his name's Mickey. And I remember him talking down at the oceanfront at that meeting right near the Domino's. And he was talking about the structure that is built with the first three steps, where there's cement in the foundation, there's the pillars of the first step, the cornerstone of the second step, and then the keystone of the third step. And I'm like, I didn't know there was a structure. I don't even remember that part. What the, like, nobody told me this. Where's the class? And I was like, dang, that's cool. And it refers to that. Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? What is that talking about? Have I surrendered? Like, that's it. Like, have I surrendered? Not only I'm an alcoholic, that because I'm an alcoholic, my life is unmanageable. My life is unmanageable. There are no caveats. There's no contingencies. There's no, well, if I get to this point in sobriety, I'm an alcoholic. My life is unmanageable, right? And really, like, do I really believe like I'm screwed, right? And is this other stuff in place? Like, is this really in place? Is it, am I really taking this disposition with a higher power? That I'm not partners with it, that I'm, I'm going to view it as like, this is a higher power. This is something that's bigger than me that can handle all my problems today. I don't know if I can 100% buy into that, but I'm going to try. And that's the important thing. Like, I'm going to try, right? And then it gets to the meat and potatoes of the program. You think the meat and potatoes would be so complicated, because I love to have something complicated that I can explain to you in such a complicated way. And it's just two paragraphs. And I'm like, son of a gun, right? And so we've emphasized willingness. Let God remove from us all the things that we have admitted are objectionable, right? Can now take all. If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us to be willing. I have to be willing to let all of it go. I had a huge issue with honesty. Honesty was just not something that was very important. I was, you know, child of a divorced home, and honesty was just like, that was part of my mask. It was not something important. And now I had to let that go. Or at the very least, allow the possibility that this higher power was actually like, I'm gonna get rid of it. And so I say a prayer for that. And that continues today, because there's some, when I actually see these things that don't work for me, I actually got to do something about it. And then I got really confused with what step seven really was, as most alcoholics do. I really thought that God is removing all of this stuff and it's gone. See ya. But it has this very important line. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness. My usefulness. My usefulness to you and my fellows. So, by implication, there are defects of character, my defects of character, even though I'm willing to give them all. There's certain things that are useful. But I'm not the one trying to fix me anymore. And that's what I find with that six and seven step. I have tried my whole life to fix me, and I've ended up in shambles. I have tried relentlessly. I was listening to a speaker tape, and he was saying, I'd rather struggle loudly than die silently. And so I've got to get this stuff out there, expose it, and be willing to have a higher power that's going to work on it, but not in my opinion of how my life should go. Because I have a lot of opinions of how it should go. And so what do? I try to focus on the principles of the program. And even in the fourth step, it asks many times, do as you think your higher power would do, and then you'll be able to match calamity with serenity. And so it's like, oh, so that's what I do. I try to think of the positive things that help my sobriety versus trying to fix the things that are wrong with me, because it doesn't work. Surrender. Thanks. Let me share.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but I always go home and do six and seven. I take the hour after I finish. To me, it's part of following directions, and it shows that I'm willing to do what I need to do to get sober. I'm, following directions means follow directions. And so my sponsor said that if I told you stand, you've heard the old thing, if you stand in the corner on your head, you'll do it. Well, I will, but it's not in the book. So it's in the book and it says, go do it. So I've always done it. And it's a great thing because I get to go back to to a quiet spot and meditate on what I've been doing and why. And then I get a chance to think about what's going to happen next. So the stone stuff is good. I should always show people that when I do that and read the book together. I always love this thing. We try to make mortar without sand. So the sand would be sobriety. The mortar's the fluid part. I've been drinking a lot. Do you have anything to go with it? The mixer, right? That'd be six. That would be one, two, three, four. That's the sand. Anyway, six and seven. I'm gonna be quick because we're supposed to be done. I think at 10 till. There's a book that's people have been running around reading. I've seen it. I even sat down with somebody to read it with one of the guys I sponsor, because everybody, it's called Drop the Rock, and it's about six and seven. It's about this thick, and if you've read it and you love it, I apologize if I'm going to step on your toes, but it's horrible. It's a horrible book. It's just so full of garbage. So. Having said all of that, I couldn't even finish it. And we got halfway through seven, and I said, I can't do any more of this. I'm wasting my time. So step six, I'm going to throw another book at you, which I don't really like all that much, but there's certain things in the 12 and 12 that I really have carried with me for a while. And this is one of them in step six. It says on page... 65, it says, so step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is AA's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning on this lifetime job. If the key word is entirely ready, underline the fact that I want to aim at the very best I can know or learn. And if I do, so I've learned to employ the steps on a daily basis. So I get up in the morning. This is my attitude. My attitude is I'm entirely ready to have God remove my defects of character today. I do that every day. It's not difficult. It's not 16 pages of this BS that you get from Hazleton. It just says, I am willing to let God remove my defects of character, the ones that I find objectionable, or any of them. And then I do the prayer. And the prayer says, as Kyle was pointing out, stay in the way of my usefulness to you and others, you and my fellows. So the other thing is, there may be some that are not stand, that don't stand in the way. There are still problems. But that's, if they're there, I've learned from my own experience that I haven't inventoried enough of them. I haven't gone back and looked at what's going on to cause these defects to still be there. Because what I found out in my own sobriety for me is that God, you know, this says self-will is of no use for an alcoholic. Doesn't help. That's what it says. But I think God wants me to know how screwed I am so I can then offer that to God for removal. But I have to know what that is and let God take care of whether or not they take it, or he takes it away or not. It's about that simple. There's a real quick, this gentleman that I used to listen to a lot, his name is Bob Olson. He died in December in his 80s. And he was around with all these, when all the big book guys started getting together back in the 70s and 80s. So he used to say all the time, if you look in the inventory section of the book, it says we inventory resentments, we inventory principles, we inventory institutions and principles. And everybody will inventory a resentment, and you'll inventory an institution like the police or the courts or whatever. But who inventories principles? And what does that mean, inventory principle? So think about it. It's what you're telling yourself on a daily basis. That's something that I live by. A principle is something I live by. And if I'm telling myself I'm a piece of crap all the time, that's a principle. That needs to be inventory, because you're not a piece of crap. Book says I'm a child of God. And if I have an attitude like that, then there's something wrong with me. I need to look at that. I need to ask God to remove that. And so I say all that because this is part of what happens when I start getting sober and start realizing that I don't have to go see shrinks. I don't have to go read self-help books. I just got to write inventory, read to my sponsor, and ask God to remove it. And that's all that it is. And the more you do that, unbelievable things happen. Unbelievable things happen. And I'm able to match calamity, serenity with calamity. I'm able to have things happen that I just would never in my life have believed would have happened. I mean, just miracles all the time, daily. And that's all you got to do, you know, except, of course, you got to do 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. But that's for next week, I guess. So anyway.
We're going to pack with seventh tradition baskets. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but their also their intergroup, central office, local service, district area, and the general service office remains self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside to help other alcoholics who still suffer. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to a fostering and securing a welcome environment in which our meeting can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related
Cal Alcoholic.
Hey, Cal.
I'm part of the Southeastern Regional Conference of Young People in AA. You may have heard it. It's called CIRCIPA. It's coming to Norfolk, Virginia, Labor Day weekend, August 29th through September 1st. We're going to be at the Sheraton, and it's going to be a really fun time. We have our website up, and so please feel free to register, book your rooms. We're actually having as a committee, we're having a unity event for a Super Bowl. And so if you like that flyer, we're having it in my house. Please see me after the meeting, and I'll give you the details, and you can meet our committee. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Scott.
Anyone else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or need a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting, and would home group members raise your hand? I'll point out the literature is available. It's over there to my left, your right. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here after the meeting closes. Please feel free to talk to me. And reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All audio recordings and upcoming events are meeting after the meeting. All are encouraged to come out to the fellowship after the meeting, which will be held at Stella's, Cafe Stella's. In closing, we ask the panel to thank the panel for coming out tonight.
And Grant has
started the last two pages of One Slide Before.
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
Vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly send yourself to God. Clear away the records.
Whoever next bit closes.
Our Father.
Father.
Who are you?
Hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, and forgive us not the power of glory. Stay.